From the Draco Vista Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, unlocking secrets of writing, conversing with masters of the craft, and just having a lot of fun. It's the Dragon Page, cover to cover.
Hey, welcome to another Dragon Page cover to cover. I'm Michael Armenge.
And I am Michael Stackpole.
The first one of the new year.
Absolutely. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. It has been a long little break for us.
It really has.
I'm kind of disoriented right now. I know we were not going to go this long, but I ended up last week I broke a tooth. And I had to go in, and that was a fun time.
Yeah, I recall you getting your email going, yeah, I'm getting drilled, so I don't think this is going to be any fun.
Well, I actually didn't end up getting drilled, so I don't actually go in until March. So I've got to deal with this half tooth for, luckily it doesn't hurt. It's not painful. It's just a pain in the butt because I keep biting the side of my mouth.
Oh.
And now they were digging around on my back tooth and digging around on this tooth enough that I got infected.
Oh.
So now I've got this infection that's going down my jaw and into my throat. So I feel like I have a sore throat all the time now.
Right. And they get you on antibiotics.
And I'm trying to get get on top of this thing. And I'm a little on the miserable side right now.
So this is just sort of festering rot that won't go away.
Yeah, kind of, exactly.
Which is a great segue into the ebooks market.
There we go. I figured we could use that somewhere. Well, let's talk about ebooks then.
Well,
that festering rot that it is.
That festering rot that won't go away. It's sort of a good news, bad news for publishing kind of thing. Over the last month and a half... and I don't think we've mentioned it before, HarperCollins has sued a company called Open Road Integrated Media, which apparently was founded by someone who used to be part of HarperCollins, because Open Road has released a copy of Julie of the Wolves, which was a 1972 children's book by Gene Craig. And Harper claims that their contract, which was executed in 1972, provides them, talks about, they've got the rights to publish this book, quote, in book form. All right. And that there was a phrase in the contract that said, for computer and electronic use in any forms that are currently known or unknown or may come into.
I had one of those in my contract that I finally got out of.
Now, what's interesting about that particular phraseology from all the analysis that I've been reading about this, legals and stuff like that, that phraseology, totally useless.
Yeah.
Okay, it gets thrown away. There's no court in the world that will... Because basically, when you enter a contract, you have to give informed consent, and that phrase says right there, we have no idea
what it is.
Yeah. Therefore, you can't be informed, therefore you can't consent.
Right,
okay.
Exactly.
So there's that. Now, the phrase in book form is kind of interesting and seems to be predicated on the idea that we call these things ebooks. If we called them e-scrolls... instead,
okay,
that phrase would be totally useless.
Okay.
Because it's not a book, it's a scroll.
Okay.
Because how the text scrolls right up the screen, we could call it a scroll.
Yeah, we could. And I mean, that's actually more accurate to what it is.
It is more accurate in many, many ways.
So
this is what this phraseology is what's going on. And they're fighting this out in court. Now, where this is important is that, and we have mentioned in the past, in 2001, Random House sued a company that brought out electronic versions of the Kurt Vonnegut's backlist.
Right, right.
Okay, and they lost. All right, the court said, no, you don't own those rights because they weren't specified in the contract. It was speculated today, which is January 10th or January 11th, it was speculated in the Wall Street Journal that... part of the HarperCollins suit in general is to put the fear of God into authors to prevent them from trying to do their own backlist.
Right. pursue this electronic right, electronic avenue. Yeah.
Exactly. So what you're basically seeing, and this is kind of critical, what you're basically seeing here is that big publishing knows that the horse has left the barn.
Mm-hmm.
They're closing the barn door. And then they're running out in the field yelling, "Hey, all you horses, get back in here." So you know that this is a big problem. Coupled that is there's been speculation about how a lot of publishers may in fact do something like spin off their backlist digital business.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you think about it, there's no editorial cost, there's very little delivery cost, and that backlist becomes a huge profit center all by itself.
Oh, yeah.
Concomitantly, they're talking about the possibility, and nobody really seems to think this will work, but the possibility that Barnes & Noble will spin off their Nook division.
Mm-hmm.
And keep that as a separate entity because that's becoming more and more profitable.
Well, it's kind of what Amazon's doing with the Kindle, and we're seeing with Apple and the iBooks thing. I mean, I think that we're going to start seeing some of these electronic publishing companies start really manifesting and start really becoming a big deal here very soon.
Without a doubt. And that brings us to the second thing, and this is pure speculation, but later in January, mm-hmm. Apple is advertising an event out of New York where it is being speculated that they will open themselves up to self-publishers the way these other guys have.
Well, actually, a step above what I'm reading on Mac Rumors. If you're not following Mac Rumors, Mac Rumors is awesome. They do a pretty good job of kind of curbing some of the wild speculation down to moderate speculation.
There you go. Okay.
Somewhat comes to pass. At least a good portion of it comes to pass anyway. And what I'm seeing there is they're talking that there may be even some tools that Apple has been secretly developing in the background that may be of great interest to us as authors and publishers, and to be able to take a finished PDF file, whatever that file is in whatever format, drop it into this and have it instantly accessible to all of the Apple products. Of course, it would be exclusive to Apple because that's what Apple does.
Well, we already know that they have this interesting aspect to their cloud service,
mm-hmm.
which is that if you've bought television shows, movies, you can't do this, but if you've bought television shows,
mm-hmm.
That they will allow you to download those things to any of your mobile devices,
mm-hmm.
Just by going in and saying, "Yeah, I want that one right now."
Exactly. Well, and then your cloud service, which is basically your mobile me,
right?
Which basically you can clone your entire catalog across all the devices with anybody.
Exactly.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I mean, this is powerful stuff, guys.
And the reason it's powerful stuff is that it means that guys like me don't need to pull my laptop with me going to conventions anymore. I can, you know, do everything off of.
Well, you can have it in one place, finally. You can have all your content in one place at last.
Yep.
Instead of having it reduplicated 40,000 different places.
And for those of you who are Kindle fans out there, and isn't it funny, you know, 5 years ago when we started on this, there were no Kindle fans.
There were no Kindle fans. We had nothing but Kindle rage coming into this show.
It was really, really funny. But all of you who are Kindle fans, I know you're out there saying, "Well, yeah, but we already do that. Kindle already does that. It will synchronize things across your platforms." Yes, we know that Apple is just catching up in this particular case. And it's not and when I bring this story forward, it's not to say, "Hey, look, you know, Apple's going to do it better than Amazon is or anything like that."
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm pointing out is that Barnes & Noble has got the self-publishing program. Apple will have a self-publishing program. Kindle obviously already has a self-publishing mm-hmm. program. The question is, you know, what is Kobo going to do?
Exactly.
What is Sony going to do? What are any other players going to do to try and tie into this?
And what just blows me away is that nowhere in this conversation do we have, what is Ballantine Digital going to do?
Right,
what is Tor Digital going to do? What is, you pick your major publishing house. Why is it that they cannot see the forest for the trees? And now, like you said, they're just now starting to go, "Oh, hey, I think there's a problem here."
Right, and there's going to be, it's like, I think it's called Booklist or something else, but there is a website. It's going to be a portal for selling ebooks that the major publishers are trying to put together. A couple of the major publishers in cooperation with each other are trying to put together to be a rival to Amazon. And this is what whether or not they're going to succeed remains to be seen, because it remains to be seen what Amazon will do to strike back at them and what they will do to promote themselves. And we'll have a little bit more of this discussion probably in the next show.
It's too little too late kind of conversation happening here too. I mean, it's like, okay, great that you see that there's a need here, but you're like starting the race and your competitors are about to the finish line here. So.
Right. And I also wonder, and this is just I didn't see this until Christmas time. At Christmas, my brother, my sister and I got my parents an iPad 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was showing my dad how to work the iBook software. And we pulled down a sample of one of my books.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it, and it was atrociously put together. I mean, it was just bad. And because of that, because of the way that it was put together, you know, obviously scanned and a really crappy job done of design and those things. So it looks to me that they were not really paying attention to that this was an afterthought. I wonder how much they're going to be hampered by their paper book first mentality.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be the issue all the way around.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing that, we're going to break into a bigger, longer discussion here. I think we probably better just take a quick break and come back with more. Hey folks, you've been enjoying Slice of Sci-Fi in the audio version for many, many years now.
But Michael, we have a video version as well, you know.
We do, and I tell you folks, if you have not been watching the Slice of Sci-Fi.tv, that's Slice of Sci-Fi.tv, go there now, you can see what you've been missing.
Mike, I don't know if that's necessarily a positive thing. Well, they have Sam. You're right.
That's true.
There's Sam and Michael and myself and Tim.
Crew.
Trouble, yes.
And actually, that was a perfect promo because it dovetails into my next conversation. And that is that... It's nice that we're seeing the publishing industry kind of wake up and go, hey, we need to do something about this ebook thing. But as I will say, and I will state right here, that's even becoming less of a issue as the social media, the other content delivery methods that are out there that are going to become huge.
Absolutely.
Absolutely unmistakably huge. Facebook. Facebook and Twitter. I will say it right here and now. They have got a critical mass building right now that you're going to see if you're going to see people who have been rejecting Facebook and Twitter all this time who are going to be left in the dust because they have not positioned themselves to get in on board with this thing. Primarily because it's not so much the building and maintaining your page and connecting with your high school sweetheart and all these other people that are out there, but building it as an actual kind of a soapbox shouting out to the community situation where you can present your content to people that have no clue who you are just by association of other people that it's just incredibly powerful. I mean, it is so powerful.
We're going to actually, in the next show, we're going to talk a little bit more about this because we've sort of scoped out what we're going to do. And so we'll go into that. But I think the point that you're making, and this is very, very important. This is important for anybody who's looking at publishing a book.
Mm-hmm.
You need to look at Goodreads, at Twitter, at Facebook, Google+, if you want to. Plurk is another is another Twitter-like platform out there.
Yeah, I need to back off that a little bit and say that I'm saying Facebook and Twitter as a generalization.
Right. And
please, don't jump on me and go, well, it's not just Facebook. There's plenty of others.
Right.
I understand that.
But those are the two biggest.
Exactly.
You know, if you're gonna have them in, you know, if you're gonna start, those are the places to start.
And then you can break out to the rest of them. Exactly.
keep in mind this idea that those are platforms where you can find your public audience.
Mm-hmm.
As you just suggested, those are places where people will stumble across you.
Right.
Okay, and that's really, really good. And you have to remember that this is going to be the on-ramp. This is the portal. This is the entryway. So you want to make sure that you've got material that invites people in, that makes them want to follow you, that makes them want to look at you.
Right.
And next time we'll talk a little bit more about private audience.
Right.
What you want to do there. And so that'll be really, really important.
Well, and you can build both in this platform.
Right.
And that's the thing that people are missing, or at least the people who are the naysayers of this movement, and it truly is become a movement now.
Right.
Is that, you know, they're saying, well, I don't want people knowing that much about me. I don't want to put then don't put it out.
Yep.
You know, it's just like everything in the digital medium. It just drives me crazy. People post the most private, intimate things and then get pissed off because people find it and repost it. And it's like, well, if you don't want it out there, don't put it out there.
This is something in my guide to digital publishing. Mm-hmm. One quarter of the whole book, it talks about exactly this sort of thing. What you're going to craft is your image, what you're going to put out there, mm-hmm. how you want to be seen by other individuals.
Absolutely.
It is public relations, and you have to remember that. You have to be out there the way that you want to be seen. If you don't want to have somebody find pictures of you drunk and lying in a puddle of your own vomit, don't put them up there. Two, don't put yourself in a position to have those pictures taken.
Or if they are taken, make sure that you get them locked the hell down.
Well, there you go. But you just want to be, really, really careful. I mean, you would, because look, when I first started, when I first started in this field,
mm-hmm.
And I won't mention any names, but there was a venerable old science fiction writer who was an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
We all knew that he was an alcoholic. Very friendly guy, nice drunk, but mm-hmm. you would see him constantly soused. He might spill stuff all over himself. He would look like a mess, but everybody knew him and tried mm-hmm. to help him out because they knew what that was. Okay. Here, 25, 30 years later, pictures of him, with beer spilled all over him,
mm-hmm.
would be flying around the internet in some sort of a gotcha thing
mm-hmm.
right now. And it's not out of maliciousness. It's out of, hey, I saw such and such an author, and here, can you believe it?
Exactly.
Because that's how the mentality has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to be gotten that way,
you gotta be
really, really careful about what you do.
And before the billions of voicemails and emails and everything else start flying in about I'm entitled to privacy conversation, I'm terribly afraid that those days are gone.
Well,
I was with you. I was one of these people back in the 80s and 90s when we still had that ignorance to how involved or invaded our lives really are, and we could be outraged by people posting things that we didn't want posted that people prying into our privacy. Unfortunately, we don't have that anymore because we have all voluntarily given those rights up, and we've given them up by GPS tracking, by Facebook, by basically reporting every single step that you make from your phone or through your Facebook or through your Yelp or through your Twitter or whatever you're doing.
So you come down to two things, and this is it. If you want to maintain a level of privacy,
mm-hmm.
you have to take control of what your image is.
Exactly.
You put the material out there. You own the material. You control the message.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can do.
Exactly.
Okay. And that you can be very, very successful doing.
And you overwhelm the stuff that you overwhelm the stuff you don't want seen with the stuff that you do want seen. And that's
absolutely
the other way. If you can dilute down, If you're pulling back, and the only images of you out there are you drunk at a party in your pool of vomit, That's what people are going to know you by.
Right.
You've got to put the other stuff out there to dilute that other thing, those other things.
Exactly.
Down. This is 4 years of winging it, talking, folks.
Yes. There we go. The second thing that I mentioned, the second thing that you have that you got to do is that. Damn it! It just flew out of my brain too.
It's four years
of winging it.
That's it.
I know what it was. You have to. Anytime you hear yourself, or anytime you hear somebody else say, "But I don't want to."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, ask yourself, why do you want to throw roadblocks in between you and success?
Right.
Okay. I don't want to. Is that's your feeling. Okay, that doesn't validate not doing something that could make you more successful. If you don't want to do that thing that would make you more successful, that's fine. But then on the other side of it, you can't whine about not being successful.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
So anytime you hear yourself saying, I don't want to, just quick, take a step back, weigh the pros and cons,
mm-hmm.
and then figure out a way that you can make that or some parallel phenomena work for you.
Exactly.
Okay. Look, there are going to be people out there that are school teachers
mm-hmm.
that don't want people knowing that they like to write, erotica on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So you write under a pseudonym.
Exactly.
Okay. You make sure to firewall things so that people can't find this out.
Compartmentalizing but just making sure that the stuff that you want out there gets out in the proper way.
Exactly.
You can do it. People do it all the time. I mean, it happens. It happens way more than you think.
Yeah.
And there is a good way to put a wall between your personal stuff that you don't want to keep personal and the public stuff that you present. And that's the way you have to look at it. And if you take that approach ahead of time, it's not so frightening.
Yeah,
and I think that's absolutely. A lot of it. I think technology is frightening for some people, and that's why they're resistant to it. They're afraid that it's going to get away from them. Well, it can. I'm not going to say it's impossible for it not to, but if you can take precautions and you can do it, if you do it the right way, you can do it.
Now, let's segue right here, because what we have managed to do is to procrastinate about talking about your place with your writing. And writers are very good at procrastinating.
I am very good at procrastinating. Yeah, the last several weeks have proved that.
Oh, my God. You are a writer.
I am a writer. Yes, I am. No, I honestly started down the road of actually kind of cracking open things. I did open it up.
Good.
I did open the file up. I did kind of, I hit, what I did for myself was I basically read the first paragraph in every single chapter.
Sure.
Just so that I'd kind of get another idea of, or a better idea of what I kind of had to work with. And that's about as far as it went. Then everything kind of blew up on me and with holidays and work and typical life excuses. That's what I'm going to term this from now on. I've got life excuses this week, and that's what I'm going to call it, is life excuses, because they are, and we all do them to ourselves, and I will be the first one to stand up and admit that it's total bullshit.
Okay, you notice,
and it's just basically a way to say I didn't do it this week.
You notice that life intrusion excuses.
Mm-hmm.
If you take that as an acronym, it's lie.
There you go. So, I like that.
So, yeah.
There you go. And I freely admit that. I freely admit that. It just comes down to the fact that I didn't do it.
All right. Well, since we were last together,
mm-hmm.
I managed to come up with an idea for a brand new story.
Cool.
It really has grabbed me. I started doing a lot of the prep work. So basically, you and I are kind of in the same place in terms of starting a project. You know, brand new.
Sure.
I've discussed it with some of the people in Second Life when they come in on Wednesday nights for the chat. So I'll just let people know. I haven't talked about it on my blog, but it's called The Accidental Dragon Slayer.
Okay.
It's going to be YA-ish in terms of, you know, it'll appeal to the Harry Potter demographic.
Okay.
But that's like everybody.
Sure.
In any event. But a chunk of the stuff that I was playing with it is stuff that I wanted to discuss with you, just some of the techniques and things.
Okay.
Because I think reading the first chapter your first paragraph out of each chapter, I think, is really good
mm-hmm.
to refresh yourself
exactly
as to what's going on.
And I realize there's a hell of a lot more than I remembered.
Right. So now what you got to do is that you've got to go through the phase that I refer to as book work. I mean, if we were writing historical novels or we were writing nonfiction novels, mm-hmm. this would be the research phase. We're going through and we're digging into all sorts of different stuff. The main difference is that not only do you have to dig back into that novel to pull out the pieces that you want, mm-hmm. okay, but you've got to ask yourself the all-important questions. Mm-hmm. The what-if question. Mm-hmm. So anything you accept as fact, you ask yourself, but what if that wasn't true?
Mm-hmm.
And that forces you to go, you know, if I say that dragons get superpowers whenever Mars is ascendant,
mm-hmm.
okay, what if that wasn't true? Okay, well, they don't get superpowers, or maybe they always have them, but socially only feel released when Mars is ascendant. Hmm. What does that now say about their culture? Hmm. What do I play with there? So this, what if that isn't true, is a game that you play just to open yourself up to a bunch of possibilities. Because now if we decide that, okay, they've got superpowers all the time, but they can only use them when Mars is ascendant,
mm-hmm.
then the next question is, well, what do they do when Venus is ascendant?
Mm-hmm.
What do they do when there's multiple planets lining up?
Hmm.
And, you know, so societally, because now what we've postulated is societally, they're kind of governed by the motions of planets. So you have to ask yourself, why might that be? But two, now what that can do is that can provide your actions with a clock. That
gotcha.
We've got to get something done before all these planets come together, because mm-hmm. if all the planets come together, it is going to be hell on Earth.
Well, I kind of got that going on in the story as it is. The problem is that the story truly is so freaking complex, it's not even funny. I mean,
sure.
this is the most complex thing I've ever considered writing ever.
Right.
The reality is that when I was doing the chapter headers on this,
mm-hmm.
I went back and I realized what got me started writing this book in the first place.
Right.
Why did I want to write this book? I wrote this book because I saw an image on the outside of a game box.
Okay.
And that was just the image of a girl with bat wings, dragon wings, whatever. And that was it.
Sure.
It was
sure.
just that image and that thought. What created her? And that's what sent me down this road to begin with. And what I realized is that the reason I started writing this book has nothing to do with where the book ended up.
But that's cool.
And that's
Because that happens all the freaking time.
It does.
Because
Patril becomes a back character. Miranna actually becomes the forward character. Her mom is the story, and Patril is the result of that story.
Right, right.
But at the same time, when I was writing this, I was hanging on to that so hard.
Yep.
Keep her in the book, that why am I not keeping Patril in? Why is she not part of this? And I had to keep bringing her back in. That's why the story got so complex.
And one of the things that you have to think about.
Okay. Is letting her go and making another book. I've already thought about that.
Exactly.
When I got halfway through reading the chapter headings, I was going, why don't I just pull her out and make her book two? Because that would make a hell of a lot more sense and the whole book would flow better.
There you go. Look, here is one of the big secrets, okay? And this is for everybody that's working on a novel. There are those Genesis points. There are those little things that start us down this road.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, it's like crawling through a window.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you find this fabulous mansion.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But for some reason, we don't want to get out of sight of that little window.
Yeah, that little thing that we got.
Yeah. Okay.
No. That's what got me there.
Forget the window. Okay. Forget the window. Put the window down. Nobody will get hurt.
Okay.
Put the window down.
Gotcha.
You know, with the accidental dragon slayer, mm-hmm. I started from the idea of, hey, what if there was like a world where magic was so outlawed that people were discriminated against if they were magic users.
Okay.
I mean, you know, to the point where they could be put to death and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was the starting point. You know, it was just a prejudice story. It was, let's take To Kill a Mockingbird and shift it into a fantasy setting. Okay.
Okay. I mean,
it wasn't that simple, but that was the rough starting point. As I did the work on the book, as I did the what if that isn't true,
mm-hmm.
or what does that mean,
mm-hmm.
okay, I've moved away from that point. Yeah, is there magic is still outlawed in some ways, still in there? Yeah. Is it dangerous to be somebody who uses free magic? Abso-friggin-lutely.
Mm-hmm.
But the story has gotten so much bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
That if I try and cling to that window, if I try and cling to that spark, I'm not going to let the story grow.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the most liberating things you will ever do in a story is saying thank you to that spark and letting it go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you the two things. One, it'll make the story much, much better. And two, you will find a place for that spark to show back up
yeah.
in the story.
And that's where I'm at. It's like probably the last part of this book, and it'll carry me into the next one.
There you go.
Exactly.
The second thing, and which is really, really important, and this comes down to characters, and this is while you're doing the book work, this is while you're doing all the setup work, you have, for every single character, you have to ask yourself this question. Where does this character want to go? Where mm-hmm. do they want to be? Who do they think they'll be when they grow up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then who are they going to be when they grow up?
Wow.
Okay. Because the difference between those two things
mm-hmm.
tells you how much work you're going to have to do, one, to break them of their dreams,
mm-hmm.
and also what the things you're going to have to do to shape them into that person that they will become.
Right.
And just bear in mind that person that they will become will change as you're writing the story, because you'll come up with even cooler stuff. Just as we talked about, you know, who you think they will become is another spark. You work toward it. And
to
then
be
you let
perfectly
it go.
Honest, I think I'm done going back to the book. Just from this alone.
Sure.
And actually this is kind of reaffirmation of what I kind of was thinking in my head anyway. And I'm realizing that letting that piece go tells a whole different story, or tells at least the same story down a better line.
Right, right.
And I may just start in fresh and just to go for it. I may just go in. I think I'm almost there. I'm almost there, because I've almost got it in my head how this can lay out and look better, feel better, flow better. And lose a lot of pieces.
well, there you go. And that's it. Look, one of the things you got to understand is that the story you're going to be telling this time is going to be a lot more mature story,
because mm-hmm.
you got a lot more, you know, a lot more years, a lot more miles under your belt. So
yeah, I do. Oh, it's awful.
Hey, look, you're the one with broken teeth, not me.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go.
All right.
We got to go.
All right.
On that note, it's time for my Metamucil.
There you go.
I'm going to head out of here in my nap. I need my nap. All right, thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll be back with more next week. Hopefully we'll have something exciting for you.
All right, see y'all. Bye-bye.
Bye.